Book of Exodus, chapter 32, and we can read again at verse 7. Exodus chapter 32, reading at verse 7. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go, get thee down, for thy people which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made them a molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed thereunto, and said, These be thy gods, O Israel, which have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Moses had now almost completed his 40 days up the mount, where he had received the law of God. But while he is up the mount, the children of Israel have been making a golden calf. After all that God had done for them in the past, here they are now worshipping a calf made of gold. If ever a man was faithful to his calling, it was Moses. And he surely deserved greater respect than he got. The writer to the Hebrews tells us that he was faithful in all his house. And yet, in his absence, after all he had taught them, they are turning aside, as we read here in verses 7 and 8, and worshipping this golden calf. We have three brief points this Sabbath morning. First of all, impatience leads to dissatisfaction with God. Secondly, impatience leads to innovations. Thirdly, and finally, impatience led to division. First of all, then, impatience leads to dissatisfaction with God. As we said, Moses is up on the mount, and whilst he is up on the mount, the people below are beginning to get a bit restless. They're beginning to get what we would say fed up waiting for Moses to come back down the mount and to be with them. Moses, when he left them, had not actually told them how long he would be up the mount, because Moses himself had not been told by God how long he would be up the mount. But it's obviously too long for the people below. It's obviously far too long as far as they are concerned. They're getting a bit impatient. But whatever Moses is doing up the mount, he is alone there with God. And He was called up the mount by God. And therefore he was in the way of his duty to his God. And if at all he could have been down any sooner from the top of the mount, he would have been down. So Moses is not to blame. If Moses had not been called up the mount to be alone with God, he might have been blameworthy for not being with the children of Israel at this time. But in his absence here, the people are growing very, very impatient. Now, you know when people grow impatient with the Lord's people, it's really not their impatience with that particular person or people, but really their impatience with God himself. With God himself. The children of Israel were always complaining to Moses. They were full of complaints throughout their journey through the wilderness. Moses had to take the brunt of it, but primarily their complaints are all against God himself and not actually Moses. So the people down below, they want to get on the move again. Look at what they say there in verse 2. Make us gods. They go to Aaron and they say, Aaron, make us gods which shall go before us. Because they've grown weary of waiting for Moses to come back down. And in their impatience and in their boredom, they think of something that they can do. Boredom. Laziness. Being stationary is never good for any of us. Never at all good for us. And it's boredom that leads them to commit this notorious sin of making this golden calf. But it can also be said that Moses' absence from them led them to have a very low view of him. You know how it is when, say, the teacher is in the class. The children are well behaved. They respect the teacher. They're careful not to step out of line. But once the teacher is out of sight, there's talking and there's a carry on going on. But when the teacher comes back into the class, there's immediate silence again. That's the way it is here. Moses receives their respect and they revere him as the man of God whilst he is in their presence. But once he's absent from them, they're getting up to all sorts. Getting up to all sorts. They want to give a good impression of themselves when he's present with them. But once he's out of sight, they do what they like. They do what they want and they despise Moses. Look at how they speak about Moses. Look at how they speak about him here in this chapter. We know not what has become of this Moses. This Moses. If ever there was a derogatory tone, it's in these words. This Moses. Yes, when he's present with them, they'll give him the respect that he deserves. But once he's out of sight, they're getting up to all sorts of mischief. Mischief as we read here in verse 22. So how ungrateful the people of God had grown, and how ungrateful they were of Moses. Moses was commanded up the mount, so he, as we said, was in the way of duty. So primarily, their complaint is against God himself. With God himself, their complaint is aimed. Now, it's really a complaint with God's time plan that they have. With God's time plan. God has his time for doing things with the children of Israel. His time for taking them through the wilderness. And God has his time with you and with me. And it's an appointed time. But we want everything now, don't we? We seem to want everything right away and immediately. That's the kind of society that we live in today. We want things instantaneously. And the children of Israel here are wanting to rise, get up, and go forward. They're wanting to get to the promised land, the land that flows with milk and honey. And they're forgetting that they're under the instruction, the guidance, and the time plan of God. They want to see things happening. They want to see things happening amongst themselves. They wanted to see Moses. But they couldn't. Neither could they see the God of Moses. So what do? They make something that they can focus on. They make something that they can see themselves. They make this calf made of gold. My friend, we're never more vulnerable than when God is out of sight. Never more vulnerable than when we forget all about him and go about doing our own thing. And that is what was true of Israel here. They are stationary at this time at the bottom of Mount Sinai. God and Moses are out of sight. Nothing seems to be happening. And they're fed up waiting for this Moses to come back down the mount. Well, my friend, we were singing today in Psalm 40, I waited for the Lord my God and patiently did bear. That's what faith is. That's what faith is, my friend. It's a waiting for God's time. A waiting patiently. And that's what you and I have to do. Wait for God to go before us. Wait for God to go before us. Impatience leads to dissatisfaction with God. But secondly, here, impatience leads to innovations or inventions. If you try and picture the scene here, The children of Israel are waiting indefinitely for Moses to come back down the mount. And one of the commentators, I was looking at this yesterday, thinks it was about the 35th to the 39th day. He came down on the 40th day, and if they had waited a bit longer, they would have seen him before running into this idiotic behaviour that they ended up going into. See, my friend, it's all about patience. The Christian life is not something that has instantaneous results. Not at all. They're beginning to wonder what has happened to Moses. Verse 1, we read here, and also in verse 25, we do not know what has become of him. What has become of Moses? We do not know what has become of him. Some of them are thinking that he's possibly been consumed by God's devouring fire. The fire that is God himself. Others are asking questions. Is he alive or not? You can picture the scene with all these people below, and they're all in groups and they're all discussing. Where is he? What has happened? Is he going to come back at all? Has he left us here? Has he given up on us? This Moses. Others are thinking maybe that he's been translated from earth to heaven the way Enoch, who walked with God, was translated. There's more people asking, has he backed out on us? Does he think now that he can't go on with us any further? And he's left his position and left us here just to get on with it. In the middle of nowhere, the middle of this wilderness. Well, we've got to be on our way. What's ever happened to Moses, we've got to be on our way. We're going to the promised land. So what do they do? What do they do? It's the 35th day, see. It's just before Moses is about to come down the mount on the 40th day. If they had waited a wee bit more and had a bit more patience, they would have been fined. They go straight to Aaron and they say to him, up, make us gods to go before us. Verse 5. See how impatience here leads to innovations instead of waiting on the Lord. Remember back in chapter 20 of Exodus, they were given the commandments, the law of God, the law of God, one of which, the second commandment, is thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above or that is in the earth beneath. In other words, they're not to make any symbol representing God. They were to have nothing at all to do with the gods of the heathen. And yet here they are. Aaron, make us gods to go before us. And Aaron's under pressure. There's a clamour of people all around him, wanting him to be the leader of making this false god. Poor Aaron succumbs to their desires. And so Aaron commands all the men, women and children who wore golden earrings to take off their golden earrings and to give them to him, to bring them unto him. But it's what Aaron does with these golden earrings that is significant here. The earrings are all put together. The gold is all melted down into one mass, into a mass. And from there, they form this gold into the shape of a calf, of a calf. You may ask why? Why a calf? Well, remember, this people had been in Egypt a long time, in captivity. They had seen much idolatrous worship down in Egypt. And they had become, as a consequence, infected by it and with it themselves. Now, the calf or the bull in Egypt in these days was a very significant symbol of strength. And therefore, they melt down all this gold from the earrings, and whilst it is still soft, they shape it and they form it into the shape of a calf. Into the shape of a calf. And look at verse 3 here. Aaron saw it, built an altar before it, and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." Notice how it says, Aaron saw it. They've got something they can see. They could not see Moses. They could not see the God of Moses. But they can see this. They can see this. And they're pleased with it. And notice something else here. It's not that they don't want to worship. And it's not even that they don't want to worship the true God. Look at what it says. It says that tomorrow we will sacrifice to the Lord. Now, notice the words "the Lord" there. A feast to the Lord. Now, the word "Lord" there is in capital letters. In other words, it's Jehovah God that they're worshipping. So, it's not that they don't want to worship, and it's not that they don't want to worship the true God. Not at all. Not at all. But it's the way that they want to worship and the means through which they want to worship that is the problem with them. They want to worship the true God, in other words, in a false way. Through this image, through this symbol of a calf. By means of this golden calf, this will get the people excited and interested again. This will rouse them up and give them some sense of purpose in the absence of Moses. This is something that we can all see. Get rid of all this reverence for the Almighty, they tell us. Get rid of it. Let's make the house of the Lord more relaxed and less formal. Let's not be so serious and reverent about things. Let's introduce anything and everything that people will be pleased with and gather them in. As long as we get the people interested, and as long as we keep them interested, we'll do it. And they'll say,
they'll say, we're still worshipping God. Just as they said here. Just as they said here, tomorrow is a feast to Jehovah. Oh yes, they're still worshipping God. There's nothing wrong with what they're doing at all in their own minds. Let's get everything people-friendly and things will be all right. Well, in verse 21 here, Moses has something to say. Moses comes to Aaron and he says, what did this people unto thee that thou hast brought so great a sin upon them? So great a sin upon them. A great sin. Great sin. And Moses, who was left in Aaron, who was left in charge, in Moses' absence, is caught up and involved with it. It's a great sin, Moses says, that you have committed. Why was it such a great sin? Well, there's a few reasons why this was a great sin. As Moses says, it was a great sin. It was a great sin because it was committed by people who should have known better. Who should have known better. The children of Israel, the chosen people of God, who had such a great deliverance from the land of Egypt and a great escape from the Red Sea, causing them to sing the praises of Jehovah, who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods. Who is like thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, and doing wonders? What they had witnessed of God's power and God's mercy towards themselves made this a great sin, because they should have known better. They should have known better. Think of them at Mount Sinai. We said a few moments ago that they received the law of God at Mount Sinai with thunderings and lightnings. Glorious manifestations of God all around them, and here they are still at Sinai, committing this great sin. That makes it a great sin. People may deny its idolatry, but God says it's idolatry. Look at verse 8. They have made them a molten calf and have worshipped it. They have made a molten calf and have worshipped it. Not only that, they're also ascribing to this molten calf all the glory for taking them out of the land of Egypt. Imagine. This molten calf has just been made. Long after they had come out of Egypt. And yet they're ascribing the glory to this molten calf for taking them out of Egypt. These be thy gods, O Israel, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Regardless of the fact that they were delivered from the land of Egypt long before this molten calf was ever made. Can I just say this to you on this point? Anything that attracts us to the worship of God other than God Himself is idolatry. Idolatry. The Apostle Paul, later on, refers back to this incident in the wilderness at Sinai in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 7. Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play. They rose up to play. They're committing idolatry. They're committing idolatry. Now, we don't use images in worship. Christ tells us that we worship God in spirit and in truth. But that doesn't mean to say that you don't have idols and I don't have idols in my own heart. For example, the love of money is idolatry. Idolatry. Paul tells us covetousness is idolatry. Paul tells us again that, writing to the Philippians, that there are people who make their belly their god. As if to say that people who just satisfy their sensual appetites, who overeat, they're making their belly their god. Many who worship the creature rather than the creator, that's all idolatry. All idolatrous. Thirdly and finally here, and very briefly, their impatience led to a division among them. Moses comes down the mound. He's got his successor, Joshua, coming down beside him. And in verse 19 here, we read that his anger waxes hot. His anger waxed hot. Who does he go to first? Well, obviously he goes to his brother Aaron, whom he had left with the responsibility of the people. And instead of rejecting the proposal to make a golden calf, Aaron, as we said, he's been frightened into going along with it. And when Moses confronts him, he's got an excuse. He's got an excuse. Verse 22. He says, Moses, let not the anger of my Lord wax hot. Thou knowest the people, that they are set on mischief. He's blaming the people for what he has taken the lead in himself. He's blaming them. A bit of an excuse. But then there's another excuse comes out from Aaron. Verse 24. He says, they gave me all their golden earrings, and I cast it into the fire, and there came out this calf. As if it were some kind of accident. As if it just happened. As if Aaron himself didn't shape it or mould it at all into the shape of a calf. Miserable and pathetic excuses that don't wash with the man of God Moses. Not at all. But once he's finished with Aaron, he comes then unto the rest of the people. He comes unto the rest of the people. Look at verse 26 here. Who is on the Lord's side? He stands at the gate of the camp of Israel and he cries out, who is on the Lord's side? Let him come. Let him come unto me. He says. Now there was an opportunity there for the idolatrous to repent of their sin at that particular moment. And it seems that only the tribe of Levi had actually come to take the side of Moses. And Moses commands them to take their sword and to kill the idolatrous worshippers, to slay everyone. Every man his brother and every man his companion and every man his neighbor. Regardless of family, regardless of friends, there is a division made between those who are on the Lord's side and those who are not. A division made between friends and family, between neighbors. It's the Lord's side or the side of idolatry. There's no in-betweeners here. No in-betweeners. None whatsoever. And I leave you here. I'll have to stop abruptly. I leave you here with this question. Whose side are you on? Whose side am I on? Notice what Moses says. Who is on the Lord's side? Not who is on my side. Not who is on my side. But who is on the Lord's side? Not who is on the side of my family, but who is on the Lord's side? It's the Lord's side. That's what divides. Their impatience in the end led to this division amongst them. Purged. Cleansed. Ready again for the journey to go on. Whose side are we on? Amen. May he bless his word.